The mother of the first commissioned officer to refuse to go to Iraq is here today with us on Law & Disorder to discuss her son's case. Carolyn Ho, welcome to Law & Disorder.
Thank you so much.
We're really pleased to have you with us. Can you tell us about your son's case?
Yes. My son, when he made his decision, called me January 1, 2006, and I was stunned at the time. I had no idea that he was going to actually take it as far as he was claiming that he was going to do. And at the time, I immediately said, why would you need to do this? Can you not just follow through on your obligation and then put it behind you and go on with your life? And we argued quite a bit, and I was so upset with him, I just hung up.
You were upset with your son because he didn't want to go to war.
Well, you know, all I could think of was I just did not want him to be vilified in the press. All I could see was this was my son trying to face the military-industrial complex. It was just totally overwhelming, and I just was not prepared for it. And it was days that I had to think through this because I was just overwhelmed. It was just a feelings of grief, of fear, of anger that he was doing this to himself. And I finally had to step back, realizing that our children don't necessarily do what we want them to do, and that we don't own them, however, and that we have to release them to do what their purpose in life is. And so I called him back and we talked, and, you know, I said, I'm so sorry that I was so rejecting and angry. And he said, Mom, I know where all of this is coming from, and I know that you're being protective and that you really love me. But he said, you know, I felt really betrayed by your trying to dissuade me from following my conscience, because he said, in the final analysis, I have to live with myself. And he said, it's not a matter of just being afraid to die, because yes, I know people will call me a coward, but he said, it's really for me at the end of the day being able to live with myself. And he said, I've done the research, I've read the literature, I've seen the statistics, and I've seen the coffins coming home. He said, when there are no WMDs and there are no ties to Al-Qaeda, how do I convince myself and my soldiers that they need to fight? And he said, war crimes have been committed, the Constitution has been violated, and I, as an officer, have to uphold the law, and I cannot participate in this. And he said, I would rather go to prison and be able to live with myself than look back later and be successful in society, make a good income, and yet have to live with the thought that I have committed war crimes and I have forced others to do so.
Carolyn Ho, your son, Lieutenant Aaron Watada, is the first commissioned officer to refuse to go to Iraq. You've been touring around the country trying to get support for him. How's it going?
Oh, it's going wonderfully. I've met with students at colleges. I've met with peace groups. I've met with religious groups. And it's exciting to see the momentum building and people, after hearing his Vets for Peace speech, become so inspired by his stand and asking to help and asking how to take action. I believe truly that there is a momentum that is continuing to build, and that people will be on board to stand up on his behalf. And I have gone to Congress, and I intend to go on Monday also to speak to individuals. We're still trying to build the appointment schedule and so on. And I'm just very, very hopeful. I'm not willing to stand back and say we're beaten down. And I remember at one point when I said to my son, do you realize this is like David and Goliath? And he said, Mom, but you remember what happened to Goliath. I just truly feel that with the growing movement of refuseniks globally and nationally, and the redress movement that Jonathan Hutto has been growing on the internet, I truly feel that this government is going to have to face what is reality. They cannot be living in denial and continue to say that we need to stay the course.
You've been to Congress. What's your reception been in Congress?
It hasn't been overwhelmingly supportive. I think you have one type of response where individuals are saying that Congress cannot interfere, that there is separation of powers. You know, this is inappropriate. The military courts have to be left to do the job that they were intended to do, and that I should be confident that justice will be meted out. I have had others who are saying, well, they'll look into the matter and try to do what they can. At this point, I don't have any kind of a clear direction from them. I'm still in the exploratory stage, but I haven't given up because I truly feel that our elected representatives are responsible, and that if the executive branch is not following through on upholding the law, then the legislative branch needs to provide oversight, and they need to hold the executive branch responsible and accountable. And I feel that my son's case is not separate and apart from what the legislative branch is doing. I think that they would like to say that any kind of investigation into the illegality and immorality of the war has nothing to do with my son's refusal to deploy. They are saying that, and I guess it's consistent with the way the military wishes to pursue the case, that it's a matter of whether or not he refused an order and that he cannot give reasons regarding illegality and immorality. It has nothing to do with it. They would really wish, like the military, to say, let the military deal with this as a situation where they ask the question, did he know that he had the order to deploy? Did he know that it was his duty to deploy? And also, did he board the plane or not?
That's not where a lot of people are coming from on this, Carolyn. I wanted to remind our listeners to grab a pencil. We're going to ask you how people can help your son, Lieutenant Aaron Watata. Carolyn Ho is the lieutenant's mother. She's doing a countrywide tour building support. Carolyn, what can our listeners do to help?
Yes, we have a website for Lieutenant Watata. It's www.thankyoult.org. We have a menu, and people can click on the petition page, and they can sign on electronically. This will be helpful in that we're building an e-list, a database, so that we can send call to actions to the listserv. We will also want in some future time, if he is trying to appeal to clear his name in the future, we will present that to the Congress or to the new administration. We also ask that people download the petition page and take it to their organizations, to their church groups, to schools, administrations that they work for, and have people sign on and send back the written petitions to the address below. We also ask that people sign on to an electronic resolution calling for the military to accept his resignation and dismiss the charges. Also asking people to write letters to the Secretary of the Army, to their congressional representatives, stating the same, dismiss the charges, accept his resignation. He is innocent based on Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution, which upholds the notion that all international treaties that we have entered into are the supreme law of the land. We have violated international law, which includes the Nuremberg Principles, the Hague Convention, the Geneva Convention, and the UN Charter. And my son has said that he is bound and beholden to uphold the Constitution above military law, civilian law.
Eric Seitz is your son's lawyer, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Eric called me and asked me if I would go out to Seattle and testify with regard to war crimes that were going on in Iraq, particularly around torture. And we haven't followed up. I said, of course, I'd be glad to do it. What Eric had asked me was whether I would put myself on a witness list and see if we could get the authority of different people to testify about the war crime situation in Iraq. Let me ask you, where is your son now?
My son is in Hawaii. He is meeting with different groups there to build support and to try to get the congressional delegation from Hawaii to take the leadership in his support.
Carolyn Ho, give us that website one more time.
Yes. It's www.thankyoult.org.
We'll link to that on our website, lawanddisorder.org.
Of course, we will need your donations. Your generosity has helped us move this whole the public opinion campaign along. We can only say thank you very much and hope that more people will jump on board. The legal defense is costly, and also the public opinion campaign, which continues.
Absolutely. Carolyn, what significance does your son's actions have in the larger anti-war movement?
I think that he holds the banner for the entire movement, as do all the other refuseniks. I think that people sometimes say that he is a part of it and not the other way around, but I think it needs to be perceived in the broader context, and that with his victory, I believe truly that it'll be a victory for the people and for the movement, because the movement progresses with each case, and each victory is something that brings us further along the line. I think that he does not operate in a vacuum, that he has been inspired by others that went before him, and he will be an inspiration for others to follow.
Carolyn Ho, thank you very much for being on Law and Disorder. We're all going to be marching January 27th in Washington for immediate withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. And if there's a Lieutenant Aaron Watata Brigade there, we'll be in it.
Thank you, Carolyn Ho.
Thank you very much, Carolyn.
Mother of Lieutenant Aaron Watata, the first officer to publicly refuse to deploy to Iraq.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck to Carolyn.
Thank you.
And now on Law and Disorder, we bring you a speech from Lieutenant Aaron Watata, the first commissioned officer to publicly refuse to deploy to Iraq.
I guess you could say I'm a little overwhelmed by all the support I've been given, especially here tonight. Thank you, everyone, very much. And thank you all for your tremendous support. How honored and delighted I am to be in the same room with you tonight. I am deeply humbled by the company of the other wonderful speakers that came before me. You are all true American patriots. Although long since out of uniform, you continue to fight for the very same principles you once swore to uphold and defend. No one knows the devastation and suffering of war more than the veterans, which is why we should always be the first to prevent it. I wasn't entirely sure what to say tonight. I thought, as a leader in general, I should speak to motivate. Now, I know that this isn't the military, and surely there are many out there who outrank me, and at one point or another, and yes, I am just an LT. Yet, I feel as though we are all citizens of this great country, and what I have to say is not a matter of authority, but from one citizen to another. We have all seen this war tear apart our country over the past 3 years. It seems as though nothing we've done, from vigils to protests to letters to Congress, have had any effect in persuading the powers that be. Tonight, I would like to speak to you about an idea for a change of strategy. I'm here tonight because I took a leap of faith. My action is not the first, and it certainly will not be the last. Yet, on behalf of those who follow, I require your help, your sacrifice, and that of countless other Americans. I may fail. We all may fail. But nothing we have tried has worked so far. It is time for change, and the change starts with all of us. I stand before you today not as an expert, not as one who pretends to have all the answers. I am simply an American and a servant of the American people. My humble opinions today are just that. I realize that you may not agree with everything I have to say. However, I did not choose to be a leader to be popular. I did it to serve and make better the soldiers of this country. And I swore to carry out this charge honorably under the rule of law. Today I speak with you about a radical idea. It is one born from the very concept of the American soldier, or the service member. It became instrumental in ending the Vietnam War, but it has long been since forgotten. The idea is this, that to stop an illegal and unjust war, the soldiers and service members can choose to stop fighting it. Yeah. Now, it is not an easy task for the soldier, for he or she must be aware that they are being used for ill gain. They must hold themselves responsible for individual action. They must remember duty to the Constitution and the people supersedes the ideologies of their leadership. The soldier must be willing to face ostracism by their peers, worry over the survival of their families, and of course, loss of personal freedom. They must know that resisting an authoritarian government at home is equally important to fighting a foreign aggressor on the battlefield. Finally, those wearing the uniform must know beyond any shadow of a doubt that by refusing immoral and illegal orders, they will be supported by the people not with mere words, but by action. The American soldier must rise above the socialization that tells them authority should always be obeyed without question. Rank should be respected, but never blindly followed. Amen. Awareness of the history of atrocities and destruction committed in the name of America, either through direct military intervention or by proxy war, is crucial. They must realize that this is a war not out of self-defense, but by choice, for profit and imperialistic domination. WMD, ties to Al-Qaeda, and ties to 9/11 never existed, and they never will. The soldier must know that our narrowly and questionably elected officials intentionally manipulated the evidence presented to Congress, the public, and the world to make the case for war. They must know that neither Congress nor this administration has the authority to violate the prohibition against preemptive war, an American law that still stands today. This same administration uses us for rampant violations of time-tested laws banning torture and degradation of prisoners of war. Though the American soldier wants to do right, the policies of this administration and the rules of engagement of desperate field commanders will ultimately force them to be party to war crimes. They must know some of these facts, if not all, in order to act. Mark Twain once remarked, "Each man must for himself alone decide what is right and what is wrong, which course is patriotic and which isn't. You cannot shirk this and be a man. To decide against your conviction is to be an unqualified and inexcusable traitor, both to yourself and to your country." By this, each and every American soldier, Marine, Airman, and sailor is responsible for their choices and their actions. The freedom to choose is only one that we can deny ourselves. The oath we take swears allegiance not to one man, but to a document of principles and laws designed to protect the American people. Enlisting in the military does not relinquish one's right to seek the truth, neither does it excuse one from rational thought, nor the ability to distinguish between right and wrong. "I was only following orders" is never an excuse. The Nuremberg trial showed America and the world that citizenry, as well as soldiers, have the unrelinquishable obligation to refuse complicity in the war crimes perpetrated by their government. Widespread torture and inhumane treatment of detainees is a war crime. A war of aggression born through an unofficial policy of prevention is a crime against the peace. An occupation violating the very essence of international humanitarian law and sovereignty is a crime against humanity. These crimes are funded by our tax dollars. Should citizens choose to remain silent through self-imposed ignorance or choice, it makes them equally as culpable as the soldiers in these crimes. The Constitution is no mere document. Neither is it old, outdated, or irrelevant. It is the embodiment of all that Americans hold dear: truth, justice, and equality for all. It is the formula for a government of the people and by the people. It is a government that is transparent and accountable to whom they serve, and it dictates a system of checks and balances and separation of powers to prevent the evil that is tyranny. As strong as the Constitution is, it is not foolproof. It does not fully take into account the frailty of human nature. Profit, greed, and hunger for power can corrupt individuals as much as they can corrupt institutions. The founders of the Constitution could not have imagined how money would infect our political system. Neither could they believe a standing army would be used for profit and manifest destiny. Like any common dictatorship, soldiers would be ordered to commit acts of such heinous nature as to be deemed most ungentlemanly and unbecoming that of a free country. The American soldier is not a mercenary. He or she does not simply fight wars for payment. Indeed, the state of the American soldier is worse than that of a mercenary. For a soldier for hire can walk away if they are disgusted by their employer's actions. Instead, especially when it comes to war, American soldiers become indentured servants, whether they volunteer out of patriotism or are drafted through economic desperation. Doesn't matter what the soldier believes is morally right. If this is a war of necessity, why force men and women to fight? When it comes to a war of ideology, the lines between right and wrong are blurred. How tragic it is when the term catch-22 defines the modern American military. Aside from the reality of indentured servitude, the American soldier, in theory, is much nobler. Soldier or officer, when we swear our oath, it is first and foremost to the Constitution and its protectorate, the people. If soldiers realize this war is contrary to what the Constitution extols, if they stood up and threw their weapons down, no president could ever again initiate a war of choice.
That was Lieutenant Aaron Watada, the first officer to publicly refuse to serve in Iraq.